that was sort of the beginning, really. And then as I sort of developed my career, what I also found was on the flip side is there were lots of people that were commenting or giving me advice, but that actually had a lot of bias in it around their own situation. So don't do this because, and it was because of themselves rather than it being of me. So what I thought one day was, well, hang on a second, who am I taking advice from and who should I take advice from? So I came up with this idea, and other people have had a similar idea in the past, around, well, what if you had a personal board? What if you went out and you chose the people that you thought would be the best people that could give you the best advice, but also get you to where you needed to be?
Hello, my name is Emily Jansen, and this is the Leadership is Female podcast. We interview women in the sports and entertainment businesses to teach you the tips and the mindset that will get you to the top faster. Marian Wright Edelman said, "You can't be what you can't see." Let's bring visibility to women who are crushing it in their roles. Join us week after week, season after season, as we reach back to extend a hand to pull you forward. We will lead you forward because leadership is female. Welcome to the Leadership is Female podcast, Emma Maislin. We are so happy to have you here on the show today. You founded Inspirum, a sales consultancy training and coaching business, helping sales teams and leaders unlock their full potential. You've worked with some very big clients, one of those we know pretty well here in the US, the Salesforce. But I want to kick it to you and tell us who you are, what you do, and how you got there.
Yeah, that'd be great. Oh, so thanks so much for having me, Emily. Delighted to be here today. So a little bit about my story. So I left school during my grades, actually. I never finished my grades. I came from quite a working class background, wanted to study medicine, but thought I would never get there because of cost reasons. Just fell into a sales administration job. And then before I was 20, I started working in tech and managed to find my way into working for an IBM reseller. And then sort of the rest was history, really. I started working in tech from a very young age, doing really big deals with investment banks, and then went from household name to household name in tech, people like BMC Software and SAP, to name a couple. Actually worked in the US for some microsystems as well. Worked my way up the leadership chain after being in sales, so sales leader, managing director. And then when I was at SAP, I actually got really interested in running a business and was really interested in doing something potentially for myself and running a business end to end. And I started getting involved with angel investment, specifically angel investment in females, female-led businesses. And that was really a turning point for me where I decided that I would start to work with startups, start coaching female leaders and female startups, and then has grown into coaching lots of different organizations now. And I find myself here sort of 5 years on from starting a business. And along the way, I've collected some stories of where I've helped people build out their networks, and recently authored a book last year, which was The Personal Board of You Inc. So lots of different things going on in the last 25 years for sure.
Yeah, I love that. I want to go back to when you became a sales leader. Mm-hmm. And what do you think made you a sales leader? How did you elevate yourself from someone who was just starting out and learning the craft to one who grew in that role and eventually, you know, kind of you've like made that your thing, right? So what was that tipping point in that journey of up-leveling that skill set? And why do you think you had it and others didn't?
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose if I look back, it's an interesting question. I've not been asked that one before. I was just thinking, what was the difference? So when I first became a sales leader, I'd been asked to be a leader a couple of times, and I'd said no because I had a young family. And then third time, I decided I would go into that role. I found it really hard in the first year. And I think because I'd been very successful as a salesperson, I think I had this idea, like a lot of salespeople have, which is leadership's just more sales, isn't it? It's just you're just doing more deals across, larger number of accounts. But actually, what I realized after about a year was it was all about the people that worked for me. And it was about hiring great people, supporting those people, trusting those people, enabling those people, empowering them to do a great job. And providing I had great people who felt supported, they knew how to call on me, they knew how to do their job, then we could be wildly successful. So after a couple of years in sales leadership, had a couple of absolutely amazing years with a team that I'd built. And then what then took me on to be more successful was then I got a reputation for being that sort of sales leader. And then people would then follow me. So if I saw a new opportunity and an opportunity to go into a different company, then those people would follow me because they knew what I stood for and they knew they'd be supported and that they'd be successful too. So I think that's the big thing about being an individual to sales leader is you've got to realize it's all about the team that are underneath you.
Yeah, excellent point and so true. And it's those leaders that then become successful are the ones that make that recognition. Because if you stay in that leadership role and just still consider yourself as an individual contributor, it's much, much harder to succeed.
Yeah, absolutely. It's harder to succeed. And also it's a really difficult thing, I think, for most salespeople to go from being the person with their name on the league table to then being the person writing the league table and your name never appears. Because it has to be about everyone else. It has to be who's supporting those sales. And often perhaps not even your salespeople, it's the supporting cast, because that's how you get everybody and an organization behind doing good business.
So let's make the jump in this conversation to angel investment. I just wrote those two words down as you were talking about yourself. Can you talk a little bit more about angel investing? How did you get involved? How do you develop a deal? Just in your words, sort of demystify what that might mean for our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. So I got involved in angel investing about 8 years ago now, and I was introduced to a lady, Sarah Turner, who runs an organization called Angel Academy in the UK, which is about 700 angels. And Sarah said to me, you know, you're a high net worth individual, you've done very well over the years. What are you investing in? And you know, like most people, I would say, you know, safe options, things that we know, so stocks and property, those sorts of things. And she said to me, look, why wouldn't you consider doing some angel investing, particularly in the UK? There's some good tax breaks for doing that. It's very tax efficient. So, and also there's an opportunity there to support innovation and really early stage businesses. So Sarah's organization, so Angel Academy specifically focuses on getting more females to invest and to invest in female-led businesses. There are some mixed businesses as well. And the reason for that is because female-led businesses only get less than 2% of early stage investment. And the reality is most of the people that are making those decisions about investment are male. So the more investors that you've got that are female, and the more businesses that you have that are being presented to them are female, the more investment that goes into those early stage businesses. So I did it in the beginning because I was just a bit curious about what was happening and what was the tipping point for me and what made me actually make the leap and start investing was I was working for SAP at the time, and there was an organization I saw that was an 11-person company that had got SAP to resell their product for them. And I thought, wow, if you can get a multi-billion organization to resell your product, you must have something good. And that was the first investment that I made. And sort of the rest was history. The reason why I liked Angel Academy is what they do is they demystify the investment. They support you so that you understand what you're doing. There are deal teams, which you still make your own decision, but they support you in due diligence. So actually, you're sort of hunting in packs, really, with people who have invested before, professional investors. That then gives you a bit of confidence. And then over time, you invest in a few more deals and then you sort of find your way from there, really.
That is so cool. What type of success have the companies seen that you have chosen to be an angel investor?
Yeah, so usually you sort of find a bit of a niche, but I'm a bit of a magpie. I like lots of different things. But I suppose the thing that surprised me most is I am invested in quite a few health tech businesses, which some have manufactured sort of health tech products, and some are just helping with patient care. What you tend to find with the, well, the, certainly the businesses that I've invested in, is they're not necessarily going to be the fastest unicorns on the planet. But that's generally because the CEOs that I've invested in, they run a good ship. And also, particularly with what happened last year with valuations, it's all about good quality growth and a solid valuation now, not growth at all costs. So, but certainly one of the businesses that I've invested in, a company called ImproveWell, when COVID hit, their software was deployed in the UK's Nightingale hospitals, which were the emergency hospitals, to help patient care. So it's like an aggregator of data that comes from employees that can help with patient care. So actually the success has been quite good around the sorts of stories around things like patient care and how they're helping in the med tech sector. So it's those sorts of things that have been quite interesting.
So in 2022, you wrote this book, The Personal Brand of You. And I want to talk about that because I'm sure that there's so much that's going into it from your 20, 25 years of experience. How'd you come up with the book? Why did you write the book? And then we'll dive more into some of those topics.
So I wrote the book, as I mentioned, that it was just really a collection of stories sort of over the years. So how I came up with the idea was back when I was 19 and I ended up working for an IBM reseller. How I got there was because I met somebody who said to me, "I think you could do much better than what you're doing today. Let me take you and show you an opportunity that you would have never have seen." And so I went along to this company and I interviewed and I ended up securing a job that was three times my salary that I was originally earning at the time, which was just amazing. So this guy took me, coached me, nothing in it for him other than he was just a lovely guy and it was the right thing to do for me and the right thing to do for the company. So that was sort of the beginning, really. And then as I sort of developed my career, what I also found was on the flip side is there were lots of people that were commenting or giving me advice, but that actually had a lot of bias in it around their own situation. So don't do this because, and it was because of themselves rather than it being of me. So what I thought one day was, well, hang on a second, who am I taking advice from and who should I take advice from? So I came up with this idea, and other people have had a similar idea in the past, around, well, what if you had a personal board? What if you went out and you chose the people that you thought would be the best people that could give you the best advice, but also get you to where you needed to be? And the difference between just taking general advice and actually going down a personal board type approach is we usually collect advice from people organically. We don't go and seek out the people that we should take advice from. So if you think over your career, you've probably got friends and family and colleagues and peers and all those people that you've picked up along the way, which is great. But what about all the people you don't know, or the people that are one person removed that could really sort of take you on to the next level of podcasting or whatever the thing is that you'd want to do next? So I had sort of developed this idea in my head about, so how do you diversify the advice that you take? When I was doing business women's business events, those sorts of things, this was the thing I spoke about. I spoke about building your network, talking to people, telling people what you're hoping for. We hope that life will be a meritocracy, but the reality is, if people don't know who we are, how can it be? So I kept developing this idea, and then people would use the idea, and then great things would come. They would then come back and tell me their stories and tell me what happened when they went for a promotion or changed job to a portfolio career. And then I had so many stories, I then wrote the book, because the book is actually a collection of those stories of where people have taken that advice, changed their advisors or tweaked them slightly, and then gone and achieved something amazing. So that was where I got to last year. But it was definitely, just so in case anybody thinks, oh, you write a book and that was like quick, it took me 4 years to get to that point. It wouldn't take me that long next time.
It's an interesting conversation between kind of the unsolicited advice from the people who are closest to you, or in your network. And when you talk about how it's kind of skewed based on what they did. It's really interesting because I can think of so many people in my world that have given me advice, but they're not living and walking in my shoes. And it's very much, this is what I did. So how do you make that flip from, these are the people that I know, and if I have a question, I can go to them, or, you know, maybe I'm getting a job offer and I want to kind of vet that around this group. How do you convert from that group to a personal board of directors and just be more intentional about who's included? And is there some type of formalized ask that you make, or what does that look like?
Yeah. So you got to start with, where are you going and what do you need? And then think about, okay, so who are you taking advice from and what are you missing? And when you think about the what you're missing, it could be the substance, the subject itself, but also it could be the role that you're asking people to play. So like you say, if it's based on people's own advice, well, they're mentors. If it's somebody that's got something in it for them, they're sponsors. If it's somebody that's just asking you questions and asking you to, you know, audibly commit to what you're really thinking, then they're coaches. So what we have to think about is actually, what is the role that we're asking these people to play, and be quite intentional about that. So it's okay to go to a mentor and ask them what they would have done, because they've walked the path, they've got the experience, that's great. But also know that you might want a coach's advice and you might want a sponsor's advice or those sorts of things. So having just to think about, what are you asking of the person? What role are they playing? And what do you hope for in that conversation? And then also, I would say that when you start to think about, okay, so who could you take advice from? What are you missing? It's okay to ask strangers. It's okay to put yourself out there and ask somebody that you've never spoken to before. And so my suggestion around this is a story that I tell quite a lot that's in the book. We moved to Cornwall in COVID, which is like very south of England. And I was doing everything in London or in other big international cities. And I thought, I need to know some people in Cornwall, because this is ridiculous that I'm traveling all the time. So I just Googled Angel Investing Cornwall speaker, and this guy's name came up, and I messaged him on LinkedIn and said, hey, just moved to Cornwall, Angel Investor. Could you signpost me to some communities where I could join some angel investors in Cornwall? So a very specific link, something that wouldn't have taken him very long to reply to, really specific, wasn't asking for an hour of his time or anything that was just, that felt like it was a lot of commitment. And he came back to me straight away, gave me a couple of ideas, and then said he'd be happy to meet me on Zoom and have a quick chat. We met for 20 minutes. And actually, the rest is history. He introduced me to some other people who are parents of kids at my school, the kids' school, and all of those sorts of things. And you go from there. So I think we are afraid of what we don't know. But if you don't try, then, you know, you're never going to get anywhere. So you might as well. We're all connected by at least three connections these days. So pretty much everybody's a possibility to get onto your board.
I loved your description of mentor, sponsor, and coach. And I think if you, as an individual, start to look at your network, if you're not, I think a lot of times, if you're not getting the advice that maybe you want to help you make the next big leap, maybe you need to identify like what that person is to you. Are they a mentor, sponsor, or coach? And then what other category of professional can you ask that question to that might serve a different role? That was kind of a real light bulb moment for me in this conversation.
Yeah. And you think about most people that are in corporate careers, you know, say you're on a sales teams, for example, you're on a big sales team, lots of other salespeople were like, who are you listening to for advice? I can guarantee that most people will be listening to their peers who are vying for the same jobs that they're vying for. So it's like, well, if you're taking advice from just the people who are on the same level of you in the same company, that's not a very diverse set of opinions, right? So how do we look at its peers, inside the company, outside the company, but also different roles as well and different backgrounds. So how do we mix up that experience?
What does it look like to seek feedback when you are considering a new opportunity? Let's say a jump to a new industry, or whether or not to take that new job or that promotion or cut back. I mean, it could be going in any direction. What does that seeking of feedback look like?
So I think you can use these connections for lots of different things, and I think you should use them for the planning of those conversations as well. Particularly in England, I find that if you're going for a new job, it's like it should be some sort of big secret. Well, is it? Should it be a big secret? No, I don't think it should be, because people have to know that you want the job. But also, you need to plan for those questions. Are you skilled enough for the job? Are there risks in you taking that job for you or for the employer? What questions will they ask? Who are your competitors? How will you display your strengths and mitigate your risks? There's lots of role play type questions you could have there with, again, coaches, mentors, sponsors, different people. But we rarely do that. We rarely practice what we're about to say and have that conversation, but we could absolutely do that. The other thing I would suggest, just generally around feedback as well, is there is a story in the book of a lady that I was coaching. She was always very worried about what people thought of her. And I said to her, "So what do people think of you?" And she said, "I don't know, because I've never asked." And it's like, well, perhaps you want to ask them. I said, why don't you ask? And she said, "Oh, well, I'm actually quite frightened about that." So I stole a little bit of the format from Carla Harris, actually, which is a very amazing lady that's been on Wall Street for a very long time, because she talks about the three words that you want to be known for. And I sort of had a spin on that idea, which was, well, if you don't want to receive feedback because it feels like you could get a very negative monologue going, what you might want to do is you might want to say, how would you describe me in three words? And are they the three words that you hope to be described as? And if nothing else, that gives you somewhere to start, because it's a little bit in a box. You can limit what's going on there, and it's a bit less scary than just saying, hey, give me some feedback, I'm ready.
Yeah, well, and it also gives the person who's providing the feedback some direction on where to go. That's
Yeah,
constructive
absolutely.
for you.
Well, yeah, if you're hoping for feedback on your presentation style and your strategy and those sorts of things, and they start commenting on your dress, then you've definitely not given them enough direction, for sure. But yeah, so give people some structure. Why not? And it's less scary that way.
Yeah, totally. Well, you've had so much success in your career. Can you talk to us about a hurdle that you've had to overcome to get to where you are today?
Yeah, a hurdle that I've overcome. I think possibly one of I think the biggest changes in mindset that I think I've had was when I went from managing small teams to then being a managing director and managing large teams, and then a matrix that sort of went within that. I think why I was always such a successful salesperson was because I was very action orientated and I was very productive. So I would get stuff done for my customers, and they liked that. They trusted me and they bought things from me. But actually, when you become a leader and the more senior you get, it becomes less about the to-do list. And again, it becomes more about being there for your people. So one of the things I had to learn was, when I went into the office, I had to stop trying to do the to-do list in the office, because people want to see you when they're in the office. They want to stand at your door and they want to chat to you, and they want to be motivated and all of those sorts of things. So I almost had like a double life, which was, when I was in the office, I was this persona, I was this person that was just there for everyone else. And then when I was at home, that was when I was productive, because in my eyes, that was when I was productive, because it was a different type of productivity. And I think in the very beginning, I didn't understand that. So I just felt like I was overwhelmed with being this leader and so much to do. I learned to sort of let that go, because that's just not what you're there for. You're there to drive big direction, but be there for your team.
Yeah, I resonate with that so much from leadership positions where you think, I gave my whole day away to these people. And the things on my list, like they didn't go anywhere. Like people are still, I'm responsible for getting those done, for pushing the needle a little bit further. And that's a difficult balance to strike. But I think, you know, to your earlier point, if you can realize the most important piece of your job and the biggest value of your job is giving back to your team so that they can be successful, because you can't do the work of the 10, 20, 30, 40, however many people you manage. The volume is much too big. If you can pour into them to succeed, then that's the biggest benefit for the company.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you say, it's understanding, and it's almost flipping that language in your head, which is, today I invested in my team. That was what I did today. So forget the to-do list. I invested in the team to make sure that they would be successful.
I love that. I love that. How much do you think that your own personal self-confidence has played into your success? And how have you grown that as a skill over time from this, you know, young person who ran into the right person, who got the right interview and opportunity and grew in their position? How much has that confidence in yourself to perform really helped you to succeed?
Do you need a keynote speaker for your next conference, ERG meeting, event, or group? I'm here, raising my hand. I help leaders grow their confidence so that they can lead more intentional, goal-directed, fulfilled, and happy lives. We are conditioned from our childhood to stay small. Don't be conceited. Run in the middle of the pack, because if we speak out too much or shine too brightly, we will offend other people. This could not be more wrong. When you are your best, most confident leader, you give others permission to shine too. So, how do we get there? How do we increase our confidence? I love sharing my best practices and proven methods to help leaders grow into who they are meant to be, your most confident, authentic self, ready to take on your next biggest challenge in the office and in your personal life. Get in touch at emilyjansen.com. It's a new year, and I want to welcome a new sponsor to the Leadership is Female podcast, Staffy. That's Staffi, and they can be found at getstaffy.com. We are all busy professionals and we have a lot on our plate, and GetStaffy is here to help. They are a virtual assistant company. They're virtual assistants, legal assistants, receptionists, intake client specialists, sales representatives, and paralegals are thoroughly trained and effectively can manage multiple tasks, from answering customer inquiries to booking your family activities and managing your calendar and appointments. Plus, you get to save costs with our easy subscription-based service. That's getstaffy.com, or reach out to me at Emily Jansen on Instagram, and I will connect you directly to their people. They are a phenomenal company, and we've got an interview with their CEO on the podcast. If you need help, if your company needs help, if you need a virtual assistant that can help save costs and get more done, GetStaffy is the way to do it. GetStaffy.com and mention Leadership is Female, or let me know and I will put you in touch. Let's go. I don't know about you, but I love learning more about myself. If there's a quiz out there to help me better understand who I am, I'll take it. If there's a journal prompt, I'm using it. But how about a business that helps female leaders communicate effectively while inspiring confidence and trust in those you want to impact? Sign me up. Breakthrough Brands is unlocking clarity for women leading progress. They build leadership brands for women to discover what inspires them, define what drives them, and unlock how to share their brands with others. Do you want to gain clarity on your personal brand? Shoot me a note at leadershipisfemale@gmail.com. or on Instagram, and we will introduce you to the women who will help you unlock your leadership brand. That's breakthroughbrands.com.
Yeah, so I sort of look back on those early times, and I think, I have been very, very privileged in having maybe the support that I did when I was younger, that I have never thought for a second that I couldn't do anything, that it never entered my mind that I couldn't find a way to get on and, you know, find a way of making a job work or being successful. I think I think I might have had one moment when I was maybe 19 and I was sat on my parents' floor printing out a proposal for UBS for about $6 million worth of business, where I had a moment where I thought, well, perhaps maybe I shouldn't be in this job because this doesn't seem like it's quite right. But from a confidence perspective, I think because of the support that I had around me and this early support that I had as well, I was just very blessed. And the company that I went to work for in the very early days, I think they did a lot for my confidence as well. Because even though I was 19 at that point, they never treated me like I was any less than anybody else that was in that company. And I was very fortunate to have that. So I think as I sort of got older as well, I think the thing that I sort of try and teach my kids and I talk to people about a lot is, it's really important how you talk to yourself. And it's, whilst you need to understand what people think of you, and it is important going back to the fact that, other people play such a big part in our careers, you also need to have the confidence that you can be who you want to be and be authentic and do the things that you want to do. And I actually had an experience around this because when I left the corporate world and started coaching and consulting and angel investing and all those sorts of things, whilst I actually felt very confident in all of those things, lots of people were saying to me, "What are you doing? You're like throwing away your career, what you need to take a job, you're just playing at stuff and all of those sorts of things." And I thought, wow, actually, no, I'm not. It's actually, I enjoy doing this. I have confidence. I think I'm going to be successful in doing this. So I think sometimes you need to, again, you need to be careful with the voices that you're listening to and try and get a balanced view rather than letting some voices just dominate.
Yeah, it's so true. And before we started the podcast today, we were talking about how that's what this show is for too, to expose you to a diverse set of voices that you might not be hearing from. I mean, I think a lot of the things you're saying today, Emma, are going to be these big aha moments for our listeners that, oh, okay, I can do that, or I should do that. Oh, I moved to this new city. Emma just gave me a great tip for making new connections right where I'm at. All right, I'm thinking about moving on to this role. I'm asking the wrong people, right? Like you might not be hearing that from your own peers or mentors in your network. Have the gumption to expand upon that and the belief in yourself that your ideas, your input are worth the time of others. And you have value to add, just like they have value to add to your network. So that was brilliant. I love that.
Yeah, and I think just a little point to add to that as well is we never I've said this a lot to a few people lately, and I don't know why it's just keeps sort of coming to mind, but we don't really understand or value our network until we really need it. And in fact, I think by that point, it's too late. Because if you're out of a job or you're going for a promotion or you're going for a pay rise, you're in the thick of it in that particular moment. And actually, with a bit more investment in your network, a bit more preparation of investing in some key people and having this idea of a personal board, you can be ready for anything. Sadly, what ends up happening is when these big life events happen for people, because they haven't invested in their networks, that's then when you're sort of scrambling to think, oh, actually, how do I make a difference here? How do I get that promotion? How do I make sure I'm positioned? A great example of this is I was talking to somebody the other day and they said to me, there's an opportunity above me in this corporate role, but I'm not being considered for the job. And basically, as it turned out, they hadn't been thinking about how they were branding themselves and strategizing for that job. And lo and behold, they're going to go externally now and they're going to go and find somebody else and they're not best positioned. Ship sailed. So yeah, we need to invest in our networks all the time. And sometimes we feel like we can't do that, but we haven't got time to do it, but we need to make time.
Yeah, I mean, today, like the present is when you should do it. And you can ask yourself, like, Can I make the time to do one connection on LinkedIn, one note, one text? So there's guaranteed to be a moment in your day where something comes up that you think about somebody in your network. What if you took 5 seconds to reach out to them? We certainly find plenty of time to scroll through Instagram or read meaningless newsletters. So shopping online, there's plenty of things that we fill our day with. Have a little bit more intention around that outreach. In my network, you know, there's not something that I'm like necessarily seeking or asking for right in this moment. I don't have a motive, which is a lot of times like that's the best time to be reaching out to people or saying congratulations or, hey, I thought of you when this came up, or I met this person, maybe you should know them too. Because when it does occur to you that, oh, you know, this person could probably help me get to the next level or get from A to B, you feel much more prepared to make that ask. One, you're in the habit of reaching out to your network, and two, you feel like you've paid enough into it that it can be your turn to ask for something.
Yeah, absolutely. I use the analogy, which is it's almost like the network's about sort of paying into the piggy bank for the day that you need to make the withdrawal. Mm-hmm. You should give freely into the network, knowing that when you then have the ask, you can ask and you get a good response from that. And, you know, I've been really fortunate that I think I learned that quite early on, and I don't remember ever having that light bulb moment, but I do think that by the time I'd reached about 30, I'd realized it was about having great relationships with people in the network, trying to help people as much as possible, unconditionally helping people, so that, you know, if and when I wanted something, needed something, that they would come back and help. And I see great engagement from my network now. Just to your point around if you've moved to a new city, I did this with, I was doing something for London Business School a few weeks ago, and somebody said, oh, I've just moved to Atlanta and I don't know anybody in management consulting in Atlanta. So we put a post on LinkedIn and I tagged a few people that I knew that were in Atlanta. And then this lady now has got six people that she's engaged with in management consulting in Atlanta. So don't be afraid of asking, right? The network will help you out. Just make that ask really specific.
Mm-hmm. We react to and see other people do it. So get off the sidelines and do it for yourself too. And the energy and excitement that you get from a response to your ask, it's worth pushing yourself beyond your comfort zone to do it in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just helps you sort of carve your path to where you're headed. And you'd be amazed what people are prepared to help you with, you know. So I think absolutely. So I think that's just, again, more about the idea, you know, invest in yourself. Like you say, it doesn't have to be much every day. You know, even if you just spent 10 minutes every day just investing in a few things in your network, that's worth doing.
Mm-hmm. So when you're not investing in your network, when you're not coaching, when you're not running your business, what are you up to in Cornwall?
So what are we up to in Cornwall? Well, we moved down here for the beaches. So we do a lot of, spend a lot of time on the beaches. I've got two boys. So, you know, which along with the dogs means that we're a lot of time down the beach. But also one of our fun facts as a family, I'd always wanted to learn to play the piano. So in COVID, we all started playing the piano actually, and we had an online teacher, etc. So we're all fighting over the piano now as well. So very much sort of musical outdoors, but still love to travel as well. We all do. We do a lot of cruises, love to see cities. So yeah, so still traveling, even though we're a little bit away from most major airports, but that's okay.
Oh, I love that. How much has investing in a new skill of learning piano, like, what has that done for you, for your mindset, for your brain?
Yeah. So I keep reading all these great things about people who play musical instruments are less likely to get dementia. So I'm definitely on that road of, I think it's going to be great for me when I'm older. But I sort of see playing the piano as a form of meditation, really, because you don't focus on anything else but the thing that you're doing in that particular point. And I'm not really one for the TV. I think like everybody now, our brains are so scrambled that even reading a book these days, I find it quite difficult to concentrate, although I do try. But yeah, I think, you know, an hour and a half on the piano, I usually have to kick myself off because I could stay there for a lot longer than that. So I think it's really great from a almost from a meditation point of view, just to get some focus.
I love hearing that. I'm constantly encouraging people to just try their hand at learning a new skill and what it can do for you. And that's, here's another example. Okay. We can put that one in the book. I love
yeah,
it.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's do the final four questions and then we will sadly let you go because this has been such a great conversation. What is your best piece of advice for women today so that they can level up in their life and their career?
Yeah. So I was trying to think, what is the best piece of advice that I would give? And I'm going to have to say I've got two, which is terrible that I couldn't choose between the two. So my two are one that I've mentioned earlier, which is, you know, we think that life's a meritocracy, but how can it be if people don't know who we are and what we want? So, you know, get yourself out there. And the other one was something that a friend said to me years ago, which was, I'd rather regret the things that I did than the things that I didn't. So let's just make sure that, you know, go try, like you say, try that new skill, try make that connection, try go for that job, go for that pay rise, make that career leap, because you don't want to be thinking, what if?
Mm-hmm. So where are you traveling to next?
So where am I traveling to next? I am traveling to Seattle next, actually. In a couple of weeks, which I love Seattle, love the scenery in Seattle, was the home of Concur as well when I was working there. Very much looking forward to being back out in Seattle. Even though it's a business trip, I will get an opportunity to have a look around as well.
Very nice. What is your pump up song?
Yeah. So my pump up song, I've got some terrible ones. I'm definitely like a 90s pop person. Anything terribly Spice Girls, cheesy, S Club 7, like a bit Take That as well. I was always a bit of a rocker, but I have to say, if I'm in the kitchen and I want to get dancing around, a bit of 90s pop, definitely some Spice Girls would get me dancing around.
Right there with you. Okay, what is your favorite quote?
I'm not sure I have one. What is my favorite quote? I think it's got to be along the lines of the Henry Ford, which is, you know, you believe the things that basically pass your lips, you know, whether you think you can or you don't, you'll be right. So, and I think again, it comes back to mindset, which is, you know, we can talk ourselves down, but we can also talk ourselves up if we try. I do love the Amy Cuddy "Fake It Till You Make It" as well. I think I'm a big believer in, you have to talk yourself into being successful.
So, so true. And another amazing reminder for all of us, don't talk yourself out of it before you've even tried, because then you'll be right that you can't do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Why not? Anything is possible, I think. Yeah.
So where can we pick up a copy of your book and follow along with your amazing career?
Amazing. So you can follow me on emmamaslin.com. Books available from Amazon or from our website if you'd like a signed copy. We also have a workbook as well. If people really want to take action in their careers and start planning out, go to emmamaslin.com and we can provide you with a workbook. And then our main business is inspireem.coach, which is our sales and executive consulting business. You can see a little bit on there. And follow me on LinkedIn as well. We're very active on LinkedIn and my favorite place to meet my network, actually, because you see so many people that you've seen during your career be so successful now and doing so well. I do love to see how they're all getting on. So I'm very frequently on LinkedIn as well.
Well, Emma, it's been incredible. Thank you so much for being a part of the show and sharing your wisdom with us today.
Great. Thanks very much for having me, Emily.
Thank you so much for spending your time with us today. time is your most precious resource, and it means the world that you spent it with us. Please help us reach more people who need to hear these interviews by hitting the subscribe button and the 5-star rating on your iPhone. Do you know someone who could benefit from this interview? Please share it. Take a screenshot and post to your Instagram stories, copy the link and share on LinkedIn, or text that link to your colleague. The Leadership is Female podcast exists to showcase female leadership in sports and entertainment and give you the tips to level up. We will extend a hand back to lead you forward. Extend the same hand by sharing this with someone who needs to hear it. One last thing. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Leadership is Female. Now, take this lesson and run. Let's go.